What's up, founders, and welcome to the In Demand podcast, where we talk all about how to troubleshoot growth for your PLG SaaS. I'm your co-host, Asia Arangio, the CEO and founder of Demand Maven.
And I'm Kim Talarczyk, client services manager at Demand Maven, where we help SaaS companies reach their toughest growth milestones.
All right, Kim, let's get into it. So I guess like for the first episode, I'd love to just kind of do like a kick off a little reflection process. I have not done a year in review in a long time. Like I think the last one I did was like 2022 or 23 or something.
Well, every AI tool is now doing that. So
I know. It's funny because there's not really an excuse anymore to do like a year in review. But I think this time feels more like the right time. And I think what it is I would always do years in review in October of the year for that particular year, or like maybe November. But I think waiting until the year has actually passed and like you get into the new year to reflect back, I do feel like now is the right time. But also, as of yesterday, the 4th, February 4th, is Demand Maven's birthday. So
Yay.
Kim's like, kill me. No, I'm just kidding. No, it's been 8 years, and it does feel a little wild. I've been at Demand Maven longer than I've been at any full-time in-house role, almost longer or as long as my entire career, which is kind of crazy because I spent, 5 years at Arc, and then I spent less than a year at Flip My Funnel. Flip My Funnel was a community that was run by another company called Terminus. And yep, I was there for less than a year. And then after that, it was Demand Maven. And during Demand Maven, I had two stints as fractional CMO. So one with uplisting for several years, 3 to 4 years. And then Offering Tree has been 1 year.
Yeah.
Like
already.
Next week, I think will be a year, which is also kind of wild.
Yeah.
Because it went so fast.
It did.
But yeah, so I think I'd like to break out like 2025, what were some of our wins, what were our challenges, lessons learned, and then carry that on into 2026.
Yeah, that sounds good.
All right. So I'd like to start with wins. And maybe, I don't know, maybe actually wins are harder to start with. I feel like our brains are wired more for negativity and pessimism than they are for optimism and, you know, the positive things. So wins are probably going to feel harder to think about. But so my philosophy too, when it comes to Demand Maven, has, I think, more consistently been that I no longer feel pressure to make it scale. I think when I first started my business, at first I was very like, no team, I'm just going to be like a solopreneur and I'm just going to do it all by myself. And then I want to say like 1 or 2 years in. So I started Demand Maven in 2018. I want to say like around 2020. That's when I was like, or maybe 2019 actually. I was like, okay, no, I need support. Like there's no way I can do it all. And then I, you know, we hired like a bunch of people. I remember like we had like a very big operation at one point. I think we had like, well, to me. It was a big operation. It was like 8 or 9 people that we had on deck. And then we downsized pretty heavily in 2024. 2024 was the year of hell. Like I remember that. That was the worst year I'd ever had running Demand Maven, hands down. And then the best year was right before it. It was 2023, to be honest. Like that was our busiest. We had just a huge influx of clients. And I think ever since then, I've kind of let go of this pressure to grow and scale Demand Maven. Like it needs to be this, you know, full service agency that like, you know, we've got like 20, 30 full-time employees or whatever. Like I kind of let go of that. I wouldn't even call it a dream. I think it was just more of like a pressure that I felt. And it came from my own perceptions of what success looked like for a business like mine kind of looked like that. Mm-hmm. And now I've kind of totally flipped the opposite direction. Now I'm more like running a larger business that scales or whatever achieves like major growth milestones. That is still really interesting to me. And I would love to experience running a business that does that. I no longer feel the pressure to make Demand Maven that. And now I kind of just get to enjoy my little lifestyle business, which is exactly what it is. And I don't feel like the same pressure that I did before. So that's the context. I also think too, like Demand Maven is kind of a tough business to scale because so much of it is really dependent on what I want to do. And that freedom and autonomy is not always super scalable. Like you do kind of have to commit to a path if you want to scale, and you can add things on as you go for sure, but you do still have to create, you know, the foundational pieces, and then you have to have the right service market fit, charging the right amount to enable you to scale. And then also like your ability to recruit talent, like all of that has to kind of fall into place. And then finally, like delivering the result that you promise, like all that has to kind of fall into place. Services is not too markedly different, in my opinion, than SaaS. The biggest difference is that it's really people who are your resource in a services business, but you still need a process for how you deliver value in a pretty repeatable, scalable way. And it is possible with Demand Maven, but there are a couple of things that it would require that I just don't have the energy, I feel like, to pursue.
Yeah, because and your role would change drastically if you're trying to build something like that versus having your hands in the work all the time.
Right, actually like delivering it. Yeah. So I think the biggest win in the past year probably has been that I think I just kind of like settled into a really nice, more balanced version of my business. And we definitely aren't making the revenue that like we made in 2023. We're making like half of that actually. But in some ways I'm a lot more, in a lot of ways actually, I'm a lot more balanced. I'm a lot more, I just feel way less stressed and frustrated. And I feel a lot more aligned is really what I'm trying to say. I feel like I feel a lot more alignment with like, oh, I think I'm supposed to really think about my business like this. And it feels a lot more flexible. It feels a lot more, I don't know if abundant is the right word, but it definitely feels a lot more like supportive than what it did before. But I admittedly do kind of miss having a lot of people around me. Like I miss having more of a team. And I'm super grateful for like you and Alina. And I feel like I would be very stuck without everyone else. But there are times where I kind of miss like having a larger team where I'm like, oh man, like it was kind of nice, like, you know, hiring and having like a lot of people on deck. Yeah. But at the same exact, you know, it just creates a different pressure, obviously.
Right. Yeah.
But so yeah, I think that was my first win. I'm curious your thoughts. Other things that come to the top of my head are like, we really streamlined the heck out of our research processes.
We did. Yeah, I feel like we have it down.
Yeah, qualitative, we have qualitative down. Like it almost doesn't matter the type of research it is, whether it's jobs, UX, win-loss, competitive. Qualitative, we have it nailed. And also very efficient. Like we can spin up a UX research project in like no time. Anything that requires audience research, we've like got it down. I feel very proud of.
We were just talking about that. We did a sprint just in the last couple of weeks. And I was like, wow, Asia, we just, like, it took us 2 days to talk to people.
Literally.
Like it was 2 days and then another couple of days to finish talking to the group of people we were talking to. And
yeah,
we got to go right to then pulling insights and analyzing that.
Yep.
100%. Instead of, you know, weeks and then getting to the analysis.
Right. Like now our whole project takes about 5 to 6 weeks, but the research portion of it though, we crunch it into 1 week and we can usually get it done very quickly. And yeah, I've been really proud of how efficient we've been in that scenario and maximizing the potential too for insight. And, you know, I know a lot of people kind of like groan and roll their eyes about like, oh, like doing interviews takes forever, but the way that we do it now, oh my gosh, it just takes very little. It requires effort, but it's not over months, right? It's crunch it into a week, do a big sprint, do a big swing, and we can get very hyper specific about who we talk to. Like we can be choosy and like really pick who our panel is going to be for who we're actually going to talk to. But yeah, I'm pretty proud of this. I think also too, I think a win is we also expanded the types of research that we do. This has kind of been true though for the last couple of years, but I feel like last year I really doubled down on, we just needed more versatile methods of research. Mm-hmm. So jobs is great. I love jobs to be done. It can't do everything. Like, it's really great for understanding what people obviously are trying to accomplish, but also like it helps with qualifying people actually. Like, once you understand their jobs to be done, you can use that insight to qualify, like, okay, does this person really fit the ideal customer profile based on who they are, what they're trying to accomplish, what they're comparing it to, et cetera. But now I you know, but we also know that like jobs can't do it all. And we've added a lot more other options, which I think are, I mean, they're incredible resources and powerful ways of getting insight to inform strategy or whatever it is that you're trying to troubleshoot. So yeah, we do a lot more now too. And I like UX is super powerful. Like,
yeah. Yeah. And it's having like all the experience we have with jobs and jobs theory, I think really set Demand Maven up to be able to now offer those in a really streamlined and efficient way. Cause like you said, yeah, we're a lot of times we're going back to jobs to like pull the context, make sure we got like the right ICP, but then branching off from there, you know, doing what UX and doing screen shares with people, and that doesn't have to be jobs.
Yeah, exactly. It doesn't have to be jobs. It, and like, yeah, there are just so many other ways to get information to inform how you think about something. I think the other thing too is like, you know, we talk about this all the time because, you know, we're us, but I think getting our clients to see too that you don't have to guess on a lot of these things. Like, there are processes that you can leverage to get the information that you need to make a decision to make progress. Like, you don't have to be stuck, for example, on poor activation. You don't have to be stuck on poor retention or whatever. And I think, you know, a lot of savvy founders and savvy teams, like, they understand that sometimes the best thing to do is to get on the phone with someone and to figure it out together. And I feel like our processes also help enable teams to kind of see like, oh, you can talk to someone in less than 24 hours if you really wanted to. Being slow is a choice. Right. So we can choose to be fast. And I think like that's also been kind of cool to see our clients really embrace these processes, and they don't just do it the one time with us. They continue to do it after. So that's been really cool to see.
Yeah.
But yeah, the UX interviews are probably my favorite. Audience interviews are also always fun, like just to kind of like meet people in general and kind of get a sense for like what's going on. Pricing interviews are really fun because I don't know, you just hear a lot of different perspectives. And then I've also really enjoyed, I didn't think I would like the competitive intelligence interviews. But, and we haven't done that a ton for clients. We really just started like in the past year or so, but it like those have been fascinating. And I know like the one in particular I'm thinking of, Kim, I don't think you were as much of a part of, but those are fascinating. Like hearing how other companies like run their operations and kind of getting a feel for like where they saw success, where they didn't, and how that can inform how you think about where you find success. It's a super fascinating process. There are ways to do this, obviously, that are legal and like perfectly ethical, which obviously is what I would encourage. But yeah, like that also was really cool to do in the last year. And yeah, so that's process.
And what else? Some win-loss as well. We've done more of that, right?
Yeah, we've done more win-loss as well. Win-loss is interesting too, because like, so win-loss, obviously, like if you have a sales team, that's where win-loss is like amazing. It's really tough if you are PLG only, like you have no sales assist, no outbound sales.
Yeah.
If you have no sales led or sales assist, win-loss is really tough for PLG, purely self-serve, because when people, like trial churn is really common and most people don't reply to like the call to do a trial churn call. So this is obviously best when you have like a sales team or someone who's doing like demos or what have you. But yeah, win-loss is cool. It's also, that is probably the trickiest project, but just because people are less likely to respond. Yeah. The deals that you win, like the win side of win-loss is easy, but the loss side of win-loss is hard.
Yeah.
But the cool part is like you don't need that many of them based on your ratio of closing. So like if you have a pretty good close rate, you don't need that many loss interviews. Mm-hmm. But you still want to have a balance. But anyway, yeah. So that's, you know, we talked about like research and process. I'm trying to think of like what else comes to mind for wins. I have a few others.
Yeah, go for it. What are they? I'm trying to remember. 25. It feels so long ago.
I definitely feel that too. It does feel like it was a long time ago. I feel like I say we generously, but I feel like we figured out how to get me to create content.
That's
now,
true.
I'm gonna say that this is generous, but just because like one of the challenges I'm gonna list is like I still struggle with this. Like it's not like it's a gone forever struggle, but I think with my ADHD diagnosis, I think that kind of put it into perspective for like, okay, where and how do I get this done? Because I am so scattered all the time. And also, I just don't get the dopamine. I don't get the dopamine hit at all from like writing a blog post or writing a LinkedIn post. I just don't. And I really, really wish I did. There was a time where I used to, but I just don't get the dopamine hit anymore. And I think part of it is just because it's just not the medium that I'm the most passionate about. And talking with someone else always has been. And speaking in general has been something I've been really passionate about. And I think we kind of figured out how to get me to do the marketing thing like when I need to. And don't get me wrong, though, this is still not perfect. I think one of the top challenges is there are mediums that I just really struggle with. And, you know, there are things like AI that can help. And I'm not going to sit here and say, like, you know, we don't use that for help. Of course we do. But even still, managing my world around certain channels is really hard. Like writing for my email list that I feel a massive amounts of guilt for because I'll be like, okay, I'm ready to do this. And then I get super distracted and I don't. It's really, really, really frustrating. And then sometimes like I'll get enough of a dopamine hit. I'm like, oh yeah, I sent the one email. I'm good forever. I never have to send another thing ever again.
Right. I did it. Did it.
Yeah. And I don't like email. Like I've never liked email. I don't read it really. And because of that, I have no love. I don't really have a whole lot of love for it. It's like the thing that stresses me out. I get to my inbox and I'm like, I hate it here.
Right. Yes. You call your inbox a dumpster fire all the time. So
yeah, it's my dumpster fire graveyard. It's the, yeah, 100%. And so to me, sending someone an email, I'm just like, I'm so sorry. I'm sorry you have to get this from me. But I also know that that's how a lot of people remember that you exist. And it's also how a lot of people buy services like, oh, yeah, yes, send me that free resource. That sounds great. Like, would love that. Anyway, so it is both blessing and curse. But I do feel like last year we kind of figured out that like, oh, maybe the center of the universe for marketing for Demand Maven is actually just the podcast. And we can use this to create a number of different types of content. We can repackage, repurpose it. You know, Asia can't be trusted to write a newsletter. I will say like when it picks up in the spring, I'm probably going to have Alina help me with this because I do want to do something. And it's never for a lack of trying or never for a lack of like desire. It's just brass tacks. Like when it comes down to it, there's no other human being like on the other side, like watching me do it, I think at the end of the day. But yeah, still a challenge. But at the same time, I do kind of feel like we've figured out at least the tripwire for like, how do we get it started?
Yeah. And what was it? I think in 2025, I wrote this down. We published 20 episodes.
Yeah.
Which is about every other week, kind of, you know, and we had a break over the holidays and everything. So that's a win, right? Like gave you a dedicated time to get your thoughts out and talk it through, and we created content from that. So yeah, I totally call that a win.
I also, you know, I know a lot, you know, everyone is kind of tired of like AI slop and AI in general. And I completely agree. Like I'm not, you know, I also don't like AI slop. But what I can say is I have learned how to use AI to still create things that I care about and in a way that still feels like it's me. And then all I really have to do is go in and kind of layer on top like actual me. But the source material is still me. So I've learned, for example, you know, my my tripwire is to speak, to talk. And so what I'll do is I'll literally just like talk to Claude and be like, okay, these are my thoughts. This is what I'm thinking. And I'll talk for like 10, 15, sometimes 20 minutes. Sometimes I'll talk to Granola, mm-hmm. take the transcript and then put that into Claude and be like, okay, I want to write this. Help me do that. Mm-hmm. And it's all trained on like my writing, but you know, Claude isn't perfect. Sometimes it'll do cringe stuff. And I'm like, ugh, that's so cringe. I'll rewrite it. But at least it's, you know, I'm using my source, my own source material. And it's really helping me kind of pull together ideas, concepts. I should really say, like, it's actually helping me express them in a way that feels consistent with how I would without depending on it to create the source insight, if that makes any sense. Mm-hmm. So like, I'm still providing it the thing, but like, so that I will say like AI has been cool for that. But apart from that though, yeah, it's managing social, managing email. That's still definitely a challenge. What other wins?
So think of how the last year went. You spoke a few times, didn't you, in 2025?
Yeah, last year was probably one of my lightest speaking years in a while. And that's actually something that I do think I want to kind of turn around for 2026. I think I'm going to be more proactive about like reaching out to conferences, although now is probably a little late for this year, but at least for maybe end of this year / 2027, I can at least have some opportunities. But yeah, I spoke a couple of times. I spoke at Spark Together and I told the story about how there were a couple of like, you know, really big oh shit moments with some of our clients that we supported like the turnaround of or supported like an unlock that helped us achieve something else. And I'm not going to take credit for all of these unlocks, but there were a few clients that we worked with in the last couple of years that needed, they either had an approach that I thought was really interesting or there was an insight that we helped them achieve that helped unlock something else for them that ended up creating growth or whatever. So it was pretty cool. That was a really cool talk. Spark Together is also, that's the conference ran and led by Spark Toro. And their whole shtick is like, you know, these talks are private. Like you have to attend to really know all the details. And when you go, you definitely see why. These are some of the most like incredible and also personal stories that I think I've ever seen like at a conference before. And that was a lot of fun. That was last fall, I believe. And then I spoke at Startup Mountain Summit in Johnson City, Tennessee. That's where it is. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And that was, you know, Startup Mountain Summit. It's a small accelerator type conference. Like it's not, or maybe even incubator. I'm actually not sure like where they would fall. They feel more incubator / accelerator. And so they're like very early stage, a lot of them, very, very early stage. And so I'm kind of bringing to them like more, I don't even say like modern concepts, but like I'm bringing to them like some of the basics, like jobs to be done, understanding your ICP, understanding like the psychology of your customer, how to get inside of their heads, like how to understand like how they're making buying decisions, like some of those more critical, like base foundational things. Those are the big two though that I remember off the top of my head. I don't remember speaking. I don't think I spoke anywhere else. Like those are the two. Very light. Usually I have like 3 to 5, sometimes 6 like speaking things happening. I think next year or this year and next year, I'd like to ramp it back up though, because I miss it. I liked staying at home a lot, but I also liked like having an excuse to go to Dublin or wherever.
Yeah. I think it's a balance for you. Cause I remember there was a year when I first started that you did a ton of traveling and it really kind of drained you and it was hard for you to, you know, keep up with all the client work you were doing.
Yeah.
It sounds like you want a little more maybe than what you did in 2020.
Yeah. So 3 to 4 a year, I think, is a good balance for me. I think more than 5 and I'm like, this is too much, yeah. Which is crazy because like Will Reynolds from Sierra Interactive, I'm pretty sure he does like 10 times a year. So he's basically traveling like every month.
Yeah.
Although I feel like he's come back on that quite a bit. I feel like that's like peak years, but he's definitely speaking more than 5 times a year, if I'm not mistaken. And I'm just like, dog, I don't even know how you do it. And he's got kids and he misses them and loves his family and is just like, I'm on the road too much. And I'm just like, that's how I feel. But I feel so like puny because for me, I'm like, 4 is so much. And he's like, I do 12. Anyway, yeah, that is looking forward to 2026. I would like to do more this year for sure. And there are a couple that I have earmarked for where I would like to speak, but we'll see. There is a part of me that's like, what do I really have to say these days? I feel like I say it all the time on the podcast, but it's one of those things where it's just like, I'm just in my head about it and I just need to like get out of my head a little bit and, you know, work with people I trust to help me figure out a compelling story that I can tell that is unique to me to some degree at least. And I didn't speak at MicroConf last year. I think, did I attend? I feel like I attended.
You attended and didn't speak. Yeah.
I didn't speak. That was awesome.
Yes.
If nothing else, I'll attend a conference.
Yeah.
But speaking, in my opinion, is better because, like, you know, you get your ticket comped and sometimes they help your travel. Not always, but.
Right.
So I'm like, I'll just speak if I can. But yeah, no, that's, yeah, there's definitely a balance for me. I can't do too much. Otherwise, I'll be like brain dead. But yeah. I will say, though, there were a couple of podcasts that I was on last year that I really enjoyed. User Insights, which I think is run by User Testing. Yeah.
Yep.
So I had an incredible episode with them. And that was a lot of fun. Like, I remember being like, that was a great conversation. There was another one that I did that I remember being like, that was a great podcast. And I'm not going to remember which one it was. User Insights, though, does come to mind. Yeah, I'm not gonna remember what the other one was, but there was another one that was like awesome.
Yeah,
that's okay, though. We can find it.
Yeah, we'll have to look back.
We'll have to look. Yeah, we'll have to try and find it. The only other, there was another win that I was gonna mention, and I'm gonna totally blank on it now. I embraced I embraced more flexible custom projects last year.
Mm.
And I think that's still true today.
Yeah.
So for example, I would not have normally have done this, but technically I kind of already did do it, but I decided to do fractional CMO work.
Mm-hmm.
We'd been doing pricing for like the last couple of years, but I leaned more into that in my sales calls. I look for it as an opportunity whenever I work with clients now. There's also like activation work as well, leaned a lot more heavily. I would say that's true for the past like 2 years, but I don't know. I like, we have our base deliverables, but for the most part, I feel like we've really become more flexible in how we work with clients, because I think with the type of problems that we solve, like troubleshooting growth, like that's such a big word. And like, it means a lot to a lot of different people. To us, that means like we're looking at customer acquisition, we're looking at activation, we're looking at pricing, we're looking at expansion and retention. And we've just become more flexible and like, okay, what can we like realistically fit into a project? And then what's like a retainer or a secondary project or what have you? Before I think I tested like add-ons where there's maybe like a base project fee and then like there's all the add-ons, but I kind of realized that like nobody knows what they really need. So
right.
Trusting them to tell me like, oh yeah, like we want to add this and we want to do this and like kind of piecemealing it didn't really work for us. I see that now. Now it's more like we have a base project fee and we discuss the scope and it's more scope based, project based, and then depending on what the work is, outcome based. So yeah, it made sense.
Yeah, it made sense and it fits the dynamic that you have now, what you were talking about in the beginning of not really scaling out with a big team right now. You're touching all projects, you know, using a small team to help with things, and that allows you to customize a bit more. But I think that also fits more with your zone of genius, which growth and, you know, we talked about kind of that like CRO approach that you bring mm-hmm. lends itself to. If these founders may not exactly know what they need or you until you start digging and getting under the hood a little bit.
Yeah. Yeah. That was cool too. We also did hiring projects last year.
Yeah.
That was cool.
Yeah.
Hoping to do more of those as well.
Yeah.
But yeah. Like I just feel like we branched out and I know that that's like, I think for a lot of services, businesses and like consultancies out there, that's like the death toll of, in a way where it's like, oh, it's too many things that you're trying to do and it's not focused. But I think based off of what we've seen, I think it makes more sense for Demand Maven to be more like a full stack growth provider than we just do the one turnkey thing and that's it. And there's not really any flexibility in how we do it. Some businesses might value that, but I found that a lot of the ones that we work with or that who we seem to attract, they just have so many challenges across of so many different functions. And so us kind of being like full stack in that way has been, I think it's worked out. Now, I think, you know, the tricky part is obviously like that makes it hard to scale, but I think that's kind of the point is it's not meant to scale. It's meant to really be like boutique niche provider. And, you know, we don't take on a ton of clients every year. We really just focused on our select few, but we focus on, you know, moving the needle very big for those companies and supporting them in like many different areas. It's kind of how I see it.
And being able to be like consultative, help me say this.
Yeah. Consultative.
Consultative. Yes.
Yeah.
Having the space to do that and then expand into different, like with the smaller amount of clients, you're able to do that and sort of extend some engagements into other areas.
That brings me to challenges. I think challenges, you know, I mean, apart from like, it's so weird. I really can't complain. Last year was a decent year. it wasn't 2024. 2024 was just, it was terrible. It was trash. That second half of, really, it was the summer of 2024. That was the worst summer, I think, ever of my life. Most of it was just due to not having a whole lot of clients. I think the first like 4 to 5 months of that year, we didn't have any new clients and we skated by. That was the worst. And then in July, something flipped. Like, I just remember like we got like 4 clients at once, like, and it was like, whoa. And it felt great, but I was panicking for the first 4 to 5 months of 2024. 2025, I was kind of waiting for the shoe to drop, but it never did. Like we were good all year. And I think part of it too was the fear of, you know, I wasn't speaking as much, I don't think, in 2024. And I don't have a big list. Like, you know, we don't get clients from sending a billion emails. Clearly, I've talked about how I struggle with that already. And to some degree, like, we don't really get clients either from like posting a bunch on LinkedIn. What's wild and crazy about 2025 is that was the year that we brought the podcast back. And then now we get clients. And I'm just like, hey, you guys, no, I'm just kidding. Thank you so much for listening.
Yeah, thank you.
But no, that first half of 2024 was absolute trash. And then it slowly turned around. And then 2025, I just feel like we always had the right amount of projects. We get a lot of, I guess, like discovery calls from AI now.
Yeah.
Like a lot of people talk to Perplexity and ChatGPT and so now they're like, you know, when we get to 2026, like I kind of want to do more like SEO AI stuff. And I know that that's not traditionally, nothing about Demand Maven feels traditional. So I will say that, but like traditionally services companies don't get a whole lot of like value from doing search and from doing all, but because of the way that AI works, there's a part of me that's like, you know, someone who's typing in, I'm looking for this exact type of provider. Who would you recommend? And us popping up, I think, is a huge win. So there's a part of me that's like, I think maybe it's time to do more of that. So anyway, yeah, like I definitely had moments where, you know, we there were like 2 times last year where I was a little stressed about clients. But then it would always work out. Something would always come through. This is kind of a win, I would say. I just thought of this. But we had a lot of repeat clients last year as well. That was a first for us. We don't usually have repeats.
That's right.
Usually we'll get people coming back after like 1 to 2, sometimes even 3 years. But we had a lot of like, okay, that was great. What's the next project? And I think it's because of how we work now.
Right.
Like, I think it kind of lended itself to like more repeat projects. But anyway, that's another win that I just thought of. Yeah. Challenges. I mean, it's just going to be new client acquisition. Like, I just feel like client acquisition is tough for every services business. It's definitely tough for someone like me who hates emailing people. And like, I really don't want to write anything unless I feel very excited about something. And even then I want to talk about it instead because that's just how I am. But yeah, no, I feel like client acquisition is always going to be a challenge. Although to be fair, we always got what we needed last year. I really can't complain. Would I have liked to have made double? Sure. But when I think about the energy and the resources and like what it took to do what we did last year, I don't know if I would double what our output was, if that makes any sense.
Yeah.
Like last year was chill. I mean, obviously, you know, with contractors and freelancers, you want to keep them engaged. Like that to some degree was a little stressful, but I also feel very blessed with a flexible team. So like,
right.
So I think it worked out.
Balance.
It's a balance. Yeah. But yeah. Yeah. I don't know. I'm not sure. Like challenges wise, those are the big two that come to mind, is just how do we continue nurturing? How do we continue to create pipeline? And then how do we just make sure we don't die? That's really like the biggest thing. You know, I used to worry about delivering results for clients, and that's certainly still a focus, but I guess I have much more confidence now in our ability to do that. Like I used to kind of be like, is this going to work? I don't know. But now I'm much more decisive, I feel like, about what the right call is for clients.
Yeah. And our process is more efficient, so we can get to the meat earlier, which is clients like, of course. Yeah.
I think also too, like I used to put a lot of onus on like the deliverables, but now it's so much more on the process to me, like, and specifically including the client in the process along the way.
Right.
Like that to me has been the biggest difference. It used to be putting all of the energy into the deliverable, but now it's more like, no, put all of the energy into making sure the client gets unblocked on what they need to make progress. And of course, like we uncover like more tactical things along the way, but that's the more, I think that's the philosophy that drives our projects now, as opposed to like, oh, they're gonna be blown away when they see this slide deck, or they're gonna be blown away when they read this Google Doc. And it's not that at all anymore. At all. In fact, I'm actually kind of like, I mean, I'm gonna build this because I feel like I need to, because I'm a consultant, but
right.
But that's not the work. The real work is what's gonna happen, you know, after we get off this call. What's gonna happen, you know, when this project is done? Can we make progress in the project now? Like that's kind of where I'm at now.
Right. And now we are getting a lot of clients saying, oh, yep, we already started that. We did that. It's coming, as we're giving them our next, you know, recommendations.
Yes.
And piece of advice.
That's the best.
It's clearly working.
Agree. Yeah. What other challenges come up? Anything else? But I feel like those are the big two, and they've kind of been the big two. I feel like if we did this 3 years ago, we would have been like, oh man, our clients don't make enough progress. They don't like, or like our research takes too long, or we,
right?
No, I don't know. Yeah. Our deliverables are dumb.
Our what are dumb?
Our deliverables are dumb. But I don't feel like, yeah, no one's reading them. Like why? Or they're like, maybe not getting it in the calls. But we don't. I feel like we've kind of addressed a lot of that.
Yeah.
So far, at least.
Yeah.
So far. You know, obviously, like every client is different. You never know, but maybe we'll have to change other things again. But no, I feel like we've addressed like a lot of those issues that we knew were issues. Oh, I guess maybe if there was another challenge, I was talking about this April Dunford like recently, and it's just like the challenge of getting good case studies. I think, we do still struggle with this, but I think it's more like, you know, obviously, like there are certain financial outcomes that we can speak to with our projects. Like, yeah, like we've helped companies like literally triple their MRR. Sometimes, though, you can do that for a client and they won't do the case study. And you're just like, why? And I think there's a lot, you know, April and I were talking about this recently, and she was like, you know, if you are a good consultant, at the end of the day, your job is to make them look amazing and not necessarily you. Mm. And I agree with this. And I think the other thing too is, you know, she's like, from their perspective, they already feel like they made the smart choice in hiring you, and any result you help them achieve, it's not that you didn't help them achieve it. It's just more like they might not necessarily always see it that way, but you know, we know who or what the process was that created that insight. You know, we just experienced this. Like, we just had a client call, and the client was like, oh yeah, we made progress on that thing already. And there's no acknowledgement of like, oh, but that was your idea, Asia. Like, it's never like that. It's usually just like, oh yeah, we talked about that and we're doing it. And I think it's because in some ways I kind of see you as like, you're part of the team in a way.
Right.
And but yeah, like,
yeah, they're in the thick of it. We're on the sidelines and can see how, like, what we were able to package up and kind of share with them. And they're kind of just always moving.
And I think, yeah, I think that makes it hard sometimes for clients to feel confident or comfortable doing like case studies. But, and there are some projects certainly where it's just too soon, but there are others that are like immediate, like activation is pretty immediate. Pricing is immediate, assuming that you actually execute on things. If you never execute anything, then like there's nothing is going to happen. But if you do, and we do have a lot of clients who make fast progress, which is awesome. Yeah. Sometimes it works out. Other times it works out, but maybe it's not like as clear that it worked out, or they just don't think about it anymore. So that's hard. It's hard. I will say though, like if you have consultants, agencies, providers that you love, do the case study with them, because it literally helps them keep going. Right. But yeah, I digress. Like I said, we have plenty of stories where we have made material movement. And the other thing too is, you know, in the world of SaaS, it's MRR, right? So any revenue that we help you make, you're going to keep making.
Right.
We, however, get paid once. So it's like, so it does feel a little bit like, oh man, like if we lift your MRR by any amount of any percentage, you will in theory keep making that percentage forever until something drastically changes about your product or your market or both. But yeah, it's rough on the case study side sometimes, not all the time. But I do feel like we have a decent number of case studies. And I think sometimes it's just a matter of like just getting people to read them, leverage them or whatever. And then I do kind of feel like we have enough now that I don't know that we need like tons more, but unless like we just have like a story that we're really excited to tell.
Yeah.
Like, you know, Pickup Music, for example, is a story I would love to tell at some point. Mm-hmm. And then they just made an acquisition actually, which was pretty cool. Like that was really cool to see based off of a lot of our insights. And I'm you know, crossing our fingers that pans out for them. I feel like it hopefully will, but yeah. And then there are stories, you know, with Offering Tree too that I would love to tell, but that needs more time for sure. But anyway, I digress. So that brings us into 2026. And I have been kind of gun shy actually on making commitments and goals. I have stopped goal setting for like 2-3 years.
Yeah.
I remember doing a very soft goal setting process for 2025. I did it for 2024. This is honestly, 2024 broke me. I'll be honest. It definitely broke me. It broke my brain a little bit. It was trash, but it also kind of broke my brain low key because I remember setting all these like really aspirational goals. And then the first 4 or 5 months of the year, it was crickets. It was nothing. And it was kind of just like, oh, like this, it doesn't matter what my goals are. it kind of, and I hate to say that in a way that makes it sound like I was giving away my power. It was far more that I just didn't have control over everything that happened in 2024. Like that was, I think, the year that Silicon Valley Bank failed. That was the year that like a lot of these investments that VCs were making kind of were going poof in the sky. I remember like the market on the tech side was not great at that time of the year. And whenever the market doesn't do well, that makes bootstrapped founders scared. Like generally, like they, and I get it. Like I'm right there with you. But that is who tends to hire us are the bootstrap founders. So we get VC funded founders too, but usually it's bootstrappers. And when the bootstrappers are scared or nervous or anxious, that's when they're like, okay, we can't take any risk right now. Like this is not the time. We're just going to, you know, lay low. Cause usually they're profitable and they can. 2024 like really kind of soured the process for goal setting for me. And I didn't really do much 2025 and I didn't do much this year. Like I'm very much like, what are goals? I don't even know anymore. My clients have goals and I work towards those. But for the most part, Demand Maven goals, I'm just like, ooh. it sounds awful to say, but I'm truly, my brain is like, there's no way, like something could happen and you know, you're SOL. And it doesn't matter if you have that goal set. That's so immature. I understand how immature that sounds. But I also am just like, you know, I feel like when you're a solopreneur-ish or even like you're really small team, I don't know. That to me, it's more like, what are some of our more qualitative goals and quantitative? But I don't have revenue figures for the year. I don't have like I have a feeling for, okay, here's how much we need to make to not die, but it's really like a, I don't know. I'm not trying to like get to a million this year, I guess is all I'm trying to say. I think in terms of more like, I don't know, soft touch qualitative goals, I guess. I think for me, it's more about, I think who I want to work with this year. So I would like to work with maybe a couple of more established companies. So that's maybe one. I would also love to work with a company that really believes in design. Now I say this, and I say this with love. So for all of my clients that are listening to me right now, I say this with love. But there are certain businesses out there where you can tell that they are very design centric and design forward, where brand and design are forefront. I don't know if you ever did you ever work with Makeswift? Did you work with us when we did Makeswift?
No. I think you were finishing them up just as I was coming in.
Okay. Makeswift comes to mind here. They were a very design forward brand. Everything about their brand, about their product, about their marketing, if it wasn't pretty and delightful, if the CEO, like you were going to get a personal message DM in Slack from the CEO about how it was trash, it was ugly, and it needs to be like, it needs love, it needs someone to work on it. And I remember at first, this was years ago now, but I remember being like, is that efficient? And maybe at that stage, probably not. But I will say their relentless pursuit for design and like good design, like cutting edge design, beauty, aesthetics, it made the artist in me smile and like really happy. So I do think that there's merit to it, especially if you have the type of brand where brand actually matters, like in this way, and like great design, great product design. And I remember they wouldn't ship features unless it like looked and it felt good, but it had to be both. It couldn't just be it's functional and it works. It also had to be like, but does it feel good to use? And I remember being like, man, like that is intense. Cause like, how do you know? but looking back, I'm like, oh, you know, I really took that experience for granted because it felt like everyone was a designer, and it was really cool. And you know, I feel like they got acquired and like they're doing really well now. But like at the time, I just remember being like, man, like this is intense. Like I haven't worked in a company like this that actually cared about design and brand. And I want to feel that again. I'll be honest. Like I kind of want to feel that feeling again of like having a lot of people really, really care about the look and feel of something. And it has to actually feel good to use. And if users don't like using it, then it doesn't matter. Then we failed. Like I kind of miss that mindset a little bit.
Did the founder have a design background? Did the founder have a design background?
That's a great question. I don't know. I know that he had two co-founders with design experience. One of them was like the lead product designer, but you know, his bandwidth was limited, so he couldn't do like everything. But yeah, I just remember the CEO's name was Alan. I remember Alan was so adamant about everything like looking and feeling great. Now, he was a developer. He came from an engineering background, if I'm not mistaken. And you know, what's kind of wild and crazy is like engineers have some of the best designed tools out there. Like they're hyper efficient and but they are also usually like very pretty and they feel good to use. And I think he wanted to take a lot of that mindset into Makeswift. And I feel like he did it. Like they did a great job. They like Makeswift is a gorgeous platform to use. I'm pretty sure I'm almost positive it's still out there. Like you could still use it. It's great experience. But when I look at like products like Mango Mint, for example, like Mango Mint, I'm just like, man, I want to use something. I want to work for or with something like this or that wants to be something like this because they clearly care about brand and design and like it's in every single part of their experience. And I kind of miss that like that mindset. But anyway, So that's another. I think also too, and we're kind of seeing this early, but I also am reminded of partnerships. I would like to partner with more consultants and providers and folks who we could collaborate with because I feel like you know, we are not a full service marketing agency. We're far more of like a full stack growth consultancy, but there are still parts that we don't touch at all. Like we don't do any like engineering or development ourselves. There's a lot of marketing work that we don't do, but usually we have agency partners that we put in front of people. But there are like product designers and product thinkers and also like pricing specialists and there are definitely other types of providers that we could collaborate and work with that I feel like would be really cool.
Yeah.
Activation as well. Like there are, because we cover so many bases, it's almost like any singular provider or any provider that has like a very niche or specialist focus, all the other things that they don't cover, we could certainly fill. So I kind of feel like that would actually be a good way to partner with folks. So like in one of the examples here is like there's a pricing consultant that we're in talks with now, and we do pricing work, but our work is different enough where I feel pretty confident in like referring certain types of projects to them. But also, you know, there's a lot that they don't do any like go-to-market strategy work, customer acquisition work, activation, retention. They pretty much are focused on pricing and some positioning, some product, but mostly it's pricing. And so, yeah, like it's really cool to kind of think about like, oh, you know, I'm happy to give up the pricing work if it means I get to work with you guys on some of these other things. Like that's really cool. So yeah, I'm open to more partnerships, I think.
Yeah.
And then speaking, I would like to speak a little bit more, but I'm also kind of like, you know, obviously it's got to be the right time. And I feel like the first half of the year, those conferences are probably set, but the second half of the year is what we'd be looking at. So maybe I can send some emails and see if I can drum up some opportunities.
Yeah.
What are you excited for in 2026? Anything? I don't know if it's too early to say, but we probably could tease like the project that you're working on, like outside of Demand Maven.
Yeah. Right. With the demand recruiting. So we can tease that. Yeah. So as Asia mentioned, we've done some recruiting work for clients just as a natural part of, you know, the growth work. So looking to, you know, kind of establish that as its own entity, because we see when we work with these young SaaS companies, or sometimes not even young, just earlier stage, people becomes a problem. And Asia, you've consulted quite a bit on here are the type of people you need, or you can get away with contractors and freelancers right now. You don't need to, you know, hire full time yet. Or here's when you might want to think about a full time role, and here's, you know, what that person should be good at based on your stage and your type of company. And a lot of times we're working with founders who don't have a marketing background, and they're ready to scale their marketing, or they have product market fit now, but they don't know exactly how to get someone in to help them, you know, really dive into, you know, scaling channels and that sort. So yeah, as a kind of a natural extension of that, you know, just looking to offer those types of services to SaaS and software companies and tech companies really that kind of help support the SaaS marketing community and also founders that kind of need support in marketing.
Yeah, 100%. There's a whole tangent I could go on, but I won't, because we do already have episodes on hiring.
We do. Yeah. We talked about that a bit in some of our episodes last year, I believe.
Yeah. And yeah, the challenges with it. And no, it was cool. I think the projects last year, you know, inspired Kim really to take this on. And I was like, hell yeah, it sounds awesome. Please do. And, you know, obviously like collaborating with Demand Maven on other aspects like related to hiring, but not centric to that part. So I think, yeah, it makes a lot of sense to collaborate in that way. And then what else are we looking forward to in 2026? I'm still hesitant to set goals. And I'm like,
no, don't set goals. This is fine.
Don't do too much.
I think you manifested the right things and continuing the podcast, right? I mean, that's the plan for 2026.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Actually, I say that I would like to do more try with me's.
Oh, yeah.
I would like to unlock. Okay. So I was talking earlier about like using AI to support content creation, and we're showing up more in AI searches. I think I would like to actually do something around search and AI search visibility and some of our written content. So I've gotten feedback that people like the try with me's, but realistically, like they might not sit for an hour and kind of watch me click through things. They almost would rather like, yep, do that. If that's what gets me to create the content, great. But then let's take the transcript and actually like create a post out of it and take some screenshots and put it into something that people can consume really quickly. I love that idea. And I think I'm going to get probably Alina to help me with this. But yeah, I would like to do more of those. I'd also like to do more of like the written versions of those. I think there's also use case for, you know, I've always wanted to do something like this, but I just never could get my mind around it. Because I've been feeling more confident in my design skills, I think I want to try my hand at creating a few like downloadable resources. The most popular version of this was like the growth roadmapping canvas or something, or like business strategy canvas. There's like a canvas that's really popular or was really popular. I think I'd like to create something that kind of puts my brain around troubleshooting growth onto a piece of paper that people can workshop through. That would be really cool. I think, but there's a couple of other like lead magnet ideas that I have. Cause like, you know, I'm such a passive marketer for my business. Like, what can I do that is valuable that people would like, that would be uniquely me, but also be specific to like the services that we provide? Like, it's got to kind of check all the boxes and also be something that like I would feel good about creating. And I feel like a canvas of some kind would be in that wheelhouse. Yeah. Just like a visual mapping tool for like, okay, where do we put our energy and where do we put our focus?
Yeah, I like that.
And if it's not that, then it's like some kind of scorecard. But I do feel like scorecards are a little, I don't know. I don't love scorecards. They are, I know that they probably are helpful in some cases, but I just feel like they're so easily manipulatable into, oh, well, if your score is 3 out of 10, then book a call. I don't know. I just think they're a little corny, but I do know that some people like them.
So a scorecard to like rate your business, what would it do?
Yeah, like score yourself against these attributes or whatever. And I think part of why I don't like them is because my interpretation of what I'm asking versus someone reading it interprets it very differently. And they might be like, oh, I'm a 9 out of 10. And it's like, no, you're not. You're a 2, but you don't think you're that because reasons.
Right.
That's why I don't love scorecards.
Yeah.
And I'm just like, so I think I'd rather give a resource or a guide, but I would actually like to do something around the website. Website in general gives me a lot of anxiety because I am not a developer. And I know that there are so many no code, low code tools out there now that should help. But even for someone like me, I'm just like, my ADHD is like not excited about learning those things. So the website, often I get stuck. I get really stuck actually. And it's a little annoying because the website in theory should be one of our greatest assets. But I do kind of feel like, yeah, it's not all bad. It's just, there are certain pages where I'm just like, man, like I would love to redesign the whole thing, but it's even with AI tools out there that can do this, it's just not. I've heard Figma Makes, I think if that's what it's called. I think that's good, but it's still like you have to learn it and then you have to like deploy it and then you've got
to. Right. And then if you want to make changes, sometimes using AI tools or vibe coding becomes difficult to then go.
Exactly.
It's like less adaptable, I guess.
And I feel like as someone who is not an expert, like, do I understand front end? Sure. But like, do I really want to spend my time tinkering on the web? Not really. Not when I can be billable.
Exactly.
So no, thank you. But yeah, so like the website does give me anxiety and stress, but I am hoping to make any amount of progress on it because for better or for worse, we are showing up in AI searches and that's kind of cool. But it's also a little bit intimidating because it's like, well, okay, I probably should do something with this, but how much is TBD?
Right.
So I feel like unless there's anything else, yeah, I mean, I'm excited for continuing to explore like what other things can I get into that's exciting and fun. I guess, okay, so I will say like I am excited about product and design. I think I've kind of mentioned that before, but I think spoilers, I just did a project activation wise where I actually like designed some comps and I actually designed some like in-app product design changes. And it was really cool to see them implement a lot of it. I'm like, wow, that's really satisfying. And then not only implement the design changes I made, but then also it working better, like seeing people take to the product better because of the design changes that we made. So anyway, so I am definitely not a designer, but I would really love to pair with actual product designers on future projects, especially when it comes to activation and retention, because yeah, I feel like that's like a core function that I'm missing. And that's not a skill set that I'm necessarily going to grow in the next whatever years, but I would love to work with someone who does have that skill set already. But maybe doesn't have like the same growth mindset. And that's kind of where, yeah.
Right.
So I would love to do more work in the product and design arena, I think, in the next year.
Yeah. And that goes back to partnerships, which helps you do that. And yeah, I think for 2026, I'm excited. Like we're getting under the hood in some different ways, like over the past year, and looking forward to that extending this year. That does lead you to doing those design projects, maybe then bringing in a designer and seeing what happens. I think maybe 3 or 4 years ago, it was a little bit more, well, because we're not a full service agency, here's the recommendations. And if you're going to implement them, great. And now with our repeat clients and doing a little bit more extensive work in pricing in different areas, we get to kind of be with them along the ride when they're making changes and implementing our recommendations, which to me is exciting. So I'm looking forward to more of that work with clients in 2026.
I agree. More of like the heavy lifting too, and not necessarily that we literally have to do, but that we can support, enable, unblock, et cetera. Cause I do feel like, you know, like we probably won't be the ones to like write marketing ads, for example, but would we work with the agency to do that and make sure it ties in? And yeah, I can see us. I mean, it's kind of like the fractional CMO layer in a way, or fractional head of growth layer, which I don't really think of. You know, it's funny. I don't think about positioning myself that way, but that's a way to think about it.
Right. Even if it's not a classic fractional CMO gig. Yeah. It's really more and more of what you've been doing, fractional growth.
Exactly. Cool.
What about travel plans for you personally for 2026? Because I know you talk about outside of Demand Maven, you also need to not only touch grass, but get away a bit. So anything
grass,
like that for you that you're planning for 2026?
Yeah. Yes. Okay. I love that you asked this question. And I'm going to try to be respectful of time. Yeah. Okay. So when it comes to travel, there's definitely trips that I'm excited to go on. So I'm going to Spain in a couple of months. And that's with like a regular group of founders and CEOs that we tend to get with every year. If I speak more this year, then that should hopefully lend itself to some travel. I really want to get back to Dublin sometime this year, next year. I don't know why, but my 1% Irish is calling for the Irish homeland. I also, I don't think I told you this, Kim, I decided to invest in Spanish lessons, with an actual Spanish teacher.
No, you did not. Was this a result of speaking Spanish during one of our customer interviews?
100%, yes. 100%. So I'm not fluent in Spanish, but I'm like, there are six levels. There's A1, A2, B1, B2, C1, C2. I think there's even like a C3 maybe. C1 and C2 are like, you're fluent. You're just kind of getting into like the nitty gritty details of Spanish. Like you're really learning the language for really specific reasons. Working proficiency is like A2, B1. And then B1, B2 are like, you're fluent, but you don't maybe have 100% of the vocabulary. Like C1, C2 is like 100% of the vocabulary, but B1, B2 is working proficiency. There's rarely a moment where speaking with a normal person, a regular person, you're like lost in the conversation. Like you can express yourself pretty accurately and consistently. And then also it's rare that you're coming across new words, or at least like in regular basic language. So the way that you and I are talking right now, like a B1 or B2 would be able to have like this conversation that we're having pretty confidently. I place in the A2, B1, mm-hmm. where reading Spanish is very easy for me. I have no issue with reading. It's the speaking for me. And it's not, you know, I don't struggle with the accent. I'm half Bedouana. I didn't grow up speaking Spanish that I remember at least, but it is very easy for me to speak like, and to sound like I kind of know what I'm doing. But when it comes to expressing myself and also listening to, like, I'm really into Bad Bunny right now because he just won Album of the Year, the Grammys. I'm listening to his music and his Boricua accent is throwing me, but it's so pretty. And so I'm just trying to like catch up, honestly, or yeah, like stay caught up with like what he's saying. But yeah, like I really struggle with like the speaking part and like the expressing part, because I just get stuck. I'll be like, how do I say? So anyway, so I already speak a lot of Spanish, and I have a whole Peruvian side of my family. Have an abuelita, we call her mamita, like, and I still cannot have like a full conversation with her. I can listen to her and I can catch, like, I can kind of like hear what she's saying, but I can't really tell her anything about myself or my life. Like, I can be like, estoy trabajando mucho, and that's about it. Yeah. And then, yeah, so I found this like Spanish language immersion organization based in Atlanta, but they have teachers. They have teachers in Argentina and like a few other places. And I have like a weekly Spanish clase con Cristian is his name. Darling man. And I also love him too, because he's like, send me all the things that you're interested in, and like send me videos, like send me stuff that, you know, I can use to create lessons around. And so I've been sending him like Carlos Alcaraz from tennis, the tennis player, el tenista. And he, you know, in the Australian Open and like in some of the other Grand Slams, they'll have Carlos Alcaraz do like the PR media interviews in Espanol. And so they're usually like 5 to 10 minutes long. So I've been sending him those videos of like Alcaraz, Carlitos, if you're a tennis fan, been sending him like Carlitos's videos in Espanol of his like entrevistas, his interviews. And it's been really cool actually to like use that as the content. But then also Bad Bunny just won the Grammy for Album of the Year. So I'm sending him like some of Bad Bunny's videos. And because so Cristian is very happy, because he's like, okay, I feel like I know what Asia's into. And anyway, so it's been fun. So yeah, we meet once a week, and I my whole goal is just to speak in Spanish for the hour. And it's amazing how the brain recalls, like it's only been a couple of weeks, but I'm already like, oh yeah, like I remember how to do this. And
that's awesome.
I just feel like this is all I needed. And it's not expensive. It's actually very affordable. So anyway, so I'm kind of like, I think I'm just going to have this. I'm going to keep it going. But so there's Spanish, but there's also like the four other languages that I have. So there's Italiano, there's Francais, and then there's Nihongo. And I have a little bit of Mandarin, a little bit of Korean, but I don't know. In my lifetime, I'm like, am I really going to get to those? Who knows? But so I've found it for Spanish, but now I have to, and I'm going to, you know, I know myself well enough to know that like, I can't do too much, because I will start mixing up the languages. And I experienced this actually when I went to Italia last year, where sometimes I would want to reply in French. I haven't spoken French in like forever,
yeah.
But I would get stuck in Italian and I'd be like, parlez-vous français? Non, ok, d'accord. And then I'm just like, that. Where does that come from? I don't know. So anyway, so I have to like get all my languages straight. But Spanish is I speak the most Spanish next to English. So that's where I'm going to start. And then eventually like add on the others and
that's awesome.
Be like a Secret Service CIA agent at any moment, or like, you know, a diplomat or something with how many languages I'm going to speak.
That's amazing.
Just need to add Russian, got to add, you know,
right.
All the others. And then, yeah, I can be like maybe a Secret Service member or something.
Right. Your next career.
Yeah, exactly. My next career, my next lifetime. But no, yeah, I would say that, and then gardening, and then getting seeds ready for the next gardening season. And then we are taking a backpacking trip in March also. And yeah, but apart from that, I feel like it's going to be an interesting year. I feel like a lot of things are going to pop up spontaneously.
Yeah.
Trying to get to Peru still. Mm. Still haven't been to Peru, but trying. We'll see. I don't know. Can't make any promises. My commitment levels at the moment are so low, but I feel like by the time that spring happens, I'm going to be like, let's do stuff. So we'll see.
Yeah. Nice.
We'll see. Awesome. Thank you for asking.
Yeah.
How about you?
So not much traveling, but we are this winter skiing, the family and I. So that's been good and getting us through the winter. We're going to go down to Florida for spring break, the kids' spring break, not like college spring break. So that'll be nice. I think what I learned last year is getting to a warmer client. I'm in the Northeast client, sorry, a warmer climate. And then speaking of going abroad, it won't happen this year, but this year I'm going to spend some time planning and I think a Europe trip is in the future for, we want to take our kids abroad. I've been a bunch, but not more recently since having the younger children around. But yeah, looking to get them. I'm thinking France right now.
Ooh, is, okay.
But me and you will have to sidebar on this because I'm sure you'll give me, I don't want to over, so they are 9 and 11, so they'll be like 10 and 12.
Okay.
So, you know, I want to keep things simple, but still have a nice, you know, we don't need to backpack Europe yet. In my view, I still kind of want to have a fun, relaxed time, but yeah. So that'll be planning this year for 2027.
That's awesome. Yeah. Oh yes. I have so many thoughts, so many questions. I love that. And you're continuing your tea journey.
Yes.
And I love
tea,
that.
The matcha. I love it. I'm off coffee and it is amazing. Yeah.
So funny. You get into matcha right when I get back into coffee with my espresso machine. The timing is perfect.
Yeah.
I love that. Well, I'm excited to see what 2026 unfolds for us and what new adventures we get into and new clients, new projects as always. And maybe I'll come around on setting some goals and like committing to more things. But I will say as it stands, I think I feel good.
No, that's, and I think the theme going into 2026 is, how do I want to say it? Like, you are letting things, you're sort of letting things unfold as they should unfold and not panicking. Going with the flow. And what we learned in 2025 was the right projects were happening. So I think the anti-goals in the way you were doing it is maybe a good thing. And, you know, you have the vision of what you want to happen. And I think we manifested a little bit just now. So I think it'll happen.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah. We've spoken it and now the universe will hear us and it will come true. Well, thank you so much, Kim, for joining me today. And thank you for walking back in time a little bit on last year, the year before, and even before then. Yeah, I always enjoy working with you and I'm excited to continue what we've got going on with just clients and the work that we get into. Yeah, it's a lot of fun.
I agree. Looking forward to it. Thanks, Asia.
Cool. Thank you. Thanks for listening.